This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource of pilots and aircraft owners.
Hello, everyone. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting for AvWeb and Aviation Consumer, and today we're speaking with Senator James Inhofe, who has just introduced legislation to create a pilot's bill of rights. Before we get into the specifics, Senator, reading over the summary of this bill, this proposed legislation really goes a bit beyond just basic enforcement considerations, and I'd like to talk first about your ideas about the overhaul of the NOTAM system and also the medical oversight aspects of this.
Yeah, well, Paul, those are both things that we got from AOPA and EAA when they decide what it receives more complaints from the general aviation pilot than anything else. Number one is always the medical certification system because, you know, if they determine that a person answered a question wrong, and it could have been very, very innocent, and I can quote specifics where this has happened, that they can actually take their license away, revoke their license, and it could be something where they overlooked that they had asthma or that they took a medication or something like that. So what we are doing is, since according to AOPA, that's the number one concern, 28% of all their complaints have to do with that. So we're going to put together a group that will include general aviation to talk about all the problems and how they can streamline the system and make it better. And the second thing is a very, very similar, having to do with NOTAMs. NOTAMs are, there is no central location, as you know, Paul, with your background, where you can find NOTAMs. You can go to a website, which we generally do and generally find what we want. However, or you can go to the Department of Defense. They have a website, too. In the case which we'll be talking about, my personal experience is where we went and found there was no NOTAM that was placed. But this bill didn't address that. It says someplace where we know that a general aviation pilot can go and find a NOTAM. As it is right now, it's unclear as to who is responsible for posting NOTAMs. The airport itself is under conditions of airport construction. It's supposed to send information in, and that is going to end up on a NOTAM somewhere. But if it doesn't happen, the FAR still say that a pilot is responsible for receiving any information on NOTAMs, whether or not it's ever published anywhere. Now, this is something that comes up quite often, and so we'll have the same approach to this, where we're going to bring in all the cases, sit down with general aviation. We'll be using both the EAA and the AOPA and others to talk about how to update this so that people will know whether or not there are NOTAMs when you're going in.
Well, how would this be if we have these kind of user groups, a board composed of members of user groups, how would that be binding on the FAA then?
Oh, no. It's for the FAA to come up with rules, and they're going to come up with rules that are binding, but they're going to listen to the concerns of general aviation before they publish their rules.
So the legislation would require them to promulgate
yes,
new FARs?
That's correct. I want to say one thing here, Paul, that will surprise you, I think. Most of the people, almost all of them I've talked to in the FAA, are very supportive. Guys in my state of Oklahoma strongly support the legislation, and we want to have you be able to share with us so that we can help you pass this thing. So a lot of the FAA is behind it. Two other things, if I could just get to these, because I'd hate to run out of time before that happens. Paul, I would have written the same thing you did if I had the limited information that was out there. But if you have the information that, number one, there were no NOTAMs, and number two, this is critical, I was actually cleared to land on the runway where there was work being done 3 miles out from runway, and I can actually read you, I have a recording now, exactly what they said. So you're going into an area where, number one, you've checked the NOTAMs, they are not there. And by the way, the comment I made about NOTAMs, I was trying to let some people off the hook, because we have a very meticulous way that I check. This may not sound significant, but I think it is. My regular schedule, Paul, is that every fifth weekend I go to Iraq, Afghanistan, or Africa. The other four weekends, I'm back in the state, get in my plane, and I go to as many as 4 or 5 communities every day and usually have the meetings at the airports. So this is a regularly scheduled thing that I've been doing for not just years but decades. So I do have staff that helps me in putting my schedule together, not only get the identifier, the frequencies, the long run, the runway length and all that, but also NOTAMs. Then I take that and check them to make sure they're accurate. So, the comment I made was a lot of pilots don't do this. There are a lot of general aviation pilots that don't do this, and I'm not suggesting that everyone should do it the same way. That's where that statement came in. The second thing that I think is very important for our listeners right now to realize, I know that general aviation people are single-issue people, and that's the way I've been able to get things done. That's how I got the Bob Hoover bill passed. That's the way, in 1994, I got the 18-year repos bill passed. That was product liability that had a huge effect on making airplanes and airplane parts here. I'm rated, I'm ranked, and have been for many years, almost every year, as the most conservative member of the United States Senate. Because of that, Paul, and I know that there are a lot of pilots that are not conservative. A lot of them are liberal. Some are conservative. They are single issue. But if you're a conservative, you have groups out there who hate you, like Rachel Maddow and MSNBC. She's on my back almost everything I introduce. She comes out and opposed to it because I'm considered to be an extremist because I'm conservative. So I only wanted to mention that because that's how a lot of misinformation gets out from people who just, quite frankly, don't like me.
Let me ask you a little more detail about the Port Isabel landing. When you approach the runway after having gotten this clearance from the local radar facility, did you see the X on the runway, and did you see the workers, and why at that point didn't you decide to go around or go somewhere else?
Well, no, as you well know with your background, I happen to be flying. I've got several planes. The one I was flying that day is a 340, a real good one with Ram 6 engines, I might add. But I had it was a full plane. So I was, you know, as you well know, you stay above the blue line, you do everything right. Once you are cleared to land and you come down, then you get to the point where you are not able to do a go-around. That by that time, if you're below the blue line or something like that, that would happen. Now, when I saw, it was very, all my passengers, they didn't even see it. I saw it. It was not even, normally it'd be a big red X or something like this. This is pretty faded. And then I saw the on the east one-third, keep in mind I was landing on 1-3, so I was landing to the east, and on the, I'm sorry, the west one-third as I was coming in, about a third of that runway, an 8,000-foot runway, had workers on it. The two-thirds beyond that did not. So I landed on the two-thirds, and it was by the time I saw it, I was to the point, and I think every pilot knows this. You get to the point where you have to make that determination. You can no longer go around. That's where I was. I have to say this also, Paul. I was a builder and developer in the real world. I have landed on that runway over 200 times. I know every square foot of it, and any of the parts of the runway other than 1331 is so bad it has holes in it and you can't use any of the other runways, so that was not an option.
Wasn't it possible then to smooth this over directly with the construction crew at the time or the airport manager?
Oh, I couldn't do it because the people that were down there, as I mentioned, some people really, if they don't like you, they don't like you. And there's one individual whose name is on all the reports, but I won't mention it now, who is, I mean, he was just delighted. He got this guy all fired up. Then since then, I think you'll find if you want to interview him, he's kind of changed his mind. And they were, you know, kind of out of control. And I think that this happens. The person I'm referring to who works at that airport immediately called the Washington Post, and then, I don't know how many magazines or newspapers, but this is his chance to get me, and this happened. This is one of the prices you pay, Paul, believe it or not, when you're in the United States Senate.
Let's talk about two more aspects of the legislation, if we might. One allows for a judicial review of FAA actions, so pilots would have the right or opportunity to appeal directly to a district court. Is that correct?
That's correct. Let me tell you why that's necessary. The way this I didn't know this before this happened to me. But when it did happen, I found that we tried to, when we got a notification that we had 10 days, which came 5 days after the time I should have received it. They sent it to my son with the same name, and I didn't get it for 5 days. But they said, you are going to have to respond. Either you would take me, they gave me an option of, and I'll give you all the documents if you want them, of remedial training, or they would go in and investigate. And, of course, you look at that and you think you have no power there. I had no information in terms of evidence. I had no voice recordings. The voice recording, and this is all documented, I requested on a regular basis from October 20th, and it was 4 months later that I finally got it. My concern was I wouldn't get it. So all of the evidence that would be used against, take me out of it, against a pilot when he's subjected to this, they don't give them the evidence. Now, what this bill does is specifically say that they will have access to the evidence before they will make any charges against them. And a lot of this came from the attorneys for AOPA and EAA saying that this is something that comes up quite frequently. Without that evidence, you are at their mercy. Now, you might think, well, you have a good case. I know that in my case, I didn't have, there were no NOTAMs, and I was cleared to land. On the other hand, if they only gave me 5 days or 10 days, I wouldn't have time to do it. And if there is an appellate process, the only appellate process was to the NTSB. Last year in the NTSB, and I bet I've got it right here, out of 362 aviation certificate appeals with the NTSB, they were reversed, only five of them. That's five out of 360. In terms of the 40 petitions seeking review of the FAA emergency determinations, only one was granted. But the deference is one that it creates the problem in that they pay deference to the FAA. Since this is a fairness issue, by having this as an opportunity so that they can go straight to the federal district court, that would make anyone who might be otherwise unfair really stopping to think, because nobody's going to want to be reversed. In this case, it was something that was a fairness issue having nothing to do with having to have a background in aviation to understand what happened.
And a related point is access to the evidence.
Now, that's correct.
Would this require... does this require a fundamental restructuring of administrative law? Because the FAA works under the same administrative law as all the other agencies do. So does that mean that we're looking at a significant overhaul here?
No, it could be a significant overhaul if it needs to that to accomplish. You know John Yotis, who's been the attorney for AOPA for many years, and his daughter Kathy Yotis. She probably handles more cases, and so we've had a team of people, including those people, looking at this to see what would have to be done. And I kind of lead in terms of how that relates to, you know, in the legal system. Up to then, we have written a bill that those attorneys that I just mentioned have said this will solve that problem. I only look at it as the experience I had. Say, well, wait a minute, I need to know what it was that I, you know, that I allegedly did wrong, and so forth.
Last question on the political side: what's the likelihood of a House version of this?
Oh well, Sam Graves. First of all, let me tell you why I'm doing this. And it really had nothing to do with my personal experience, although I learned things during that process. I was treated very fairly, and I'll use names. John McGraw, for example, is very high up. He and I sat down, and we talked about it, and I think that they're kind of in a position where they had to do something. They could be criticized because I'm a member of the Senate and all that. And so even though I'm not on the Commerce Committee, they always run everything by me that has to do with general aviation because I'm, you know, I've flown an airplane around the world, and I know all this stuff, and they think I'm smarter than I am, actually. But so I end up getting this. I'd say the same thing's true with a guy who's a lot younger. You know, I've got almost 11,000 hours. He has, I think, two or three. Sam Graves in the House. There are two ways that you can pass a bill. One is to have a House bill and a Senate bill. The other is to have, in this case, is what we're using, a Senate bill. Pass the Senate bill, take it over to the House, and it should be pretty easy to pass in the House if it passes the Senate. And the reason the timing is important is because I can look you in the eye, Paul, and tell you that we would not have been able to pass the 18-year repose bill back in 1994. That changed the United States of America into a major importer of aircraft and aircraft parts to a major exporter. It was very significant. And the only way I could get it, because of all the trial lawyers in the Senate, was to appeal to 200,000 or 300,000 single-issue people in Oshkosh and say, name the names of the senators who are opposed to it. And I'll tell you, they changed their mind pretty quick. And I wish there's a way, and I hope that you would do this. I started this out with 26 co-sponsors, and that's highly unusual to get to something where you're not taking on a bureaucracy, but you're getting into an area that most people don't understand. I would hope that if we send to you, and we can't do it, I know, over the air, but if you would print the names of these people, it'd be a great service, I think, to General Aviation, Paul, because if your name's not on here, you can assume that they're going to oppose it, and that's what the message I'm going to have at Oshkosh this year is to, I'll have a list of senators and ask people what states they're from. They'll go back to their local chapters, and the letters will start coming in.
Well, if you'll forward us the list of sponsors, we'll certainly do some follow-up news coverage on it. Senator, I want to thank you for taking the time.
Well, I appreciate you, Paul, and anytime you have anything on aviation, feel free to call me.
Thank you very much. We've been speaking to Senator James Inhofe of Oklahoma about his proposed legislation to overhaul the NOTAM system in addition to provide pilots' Bill of Rights. Thanks for listening.
This podcast has been brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine. For more information on Aviation Consumer, log on to www.aviationconsumer.com.